Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards. Save big money
at Menards. So if you wind the clock back just a few years ago, we were all told that if you said the word ivermectin, that you'd be outcast. You might be kicked off of social media for mentioning that there was potentially a curative or a treatment out there for one of the most harmful pandemics we'd ever seen in world history. You can't mention it, though. You can't talk about it, certainly on X. You couldn't talk about it on Facebook. You couldn't talk about it on YouTube. If you brought it up, you might get a warning. You might get pulled down. You might get banished. Remember, Jimmy Kimmel told us on live television that it was horse paste. It's making fun of Joe Rogan for taking ivermectin. So the largest published story, the largest study ever of human ivermectin cancer study just rolled out to date. And turns out that nearly half of the reported cancers in these patients disappeared or had massive regression after 6 months of treatment. I'm sure they don't want you to know about that. Person largely responsible for helping to get this study out there is Nicholas Holscher. He's an epidemiologist and administrator at the McCullough Foundation, and he joins us now. Nicholas, great to see you. Welcome back to the show. And it seems like the term ivermectin, at least over the past year, is popping up in far more places. And people that were once telling us that you should avoid it, this is horse paste, are now embracing it. What do you think has changed?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me. And you're right. This ivermectin, antiparasitics, fenbendazole, membendazole have been demonized by the biopharmaceutical complex, the vaccine cartel, and the chemo cartel now because it threatens their massive profiteering model of profiting from cancer patients and vaccines. Because if we go back to COVID-19, if they admitted that ivermectin was at least partially effective, they would have never have been able to emergency authorize the mRNA gene transfer injections. And so they claimed it didn't work. And now we have over 100 studies showing it did work for COVID-19. It reduced hospitalizations, cases, and time to resolution. So they were completely wrong there. And now they're also completely wrong in that it's just horse paste for cancer. We did just publish on the preprint server hosted by Zenodo, which is operated by the European Nuclear Agency for research. And what we did was, well, first of all, it's important to note what led up to this. For about 50 years, there has been sparse animal evidence, some case reports of antiparasitics in cancer. In fact, in the 1950s, the CIA actually classified a document in the 1950s that was showing antiparasitics had anti-tumor effects. They declassified it in 2011.
What?
Basically, yeah.
Hold on. I'm sorry. The CIA, 50 years ago, knew that there was evidence that taking an antiparasitic like ivermectin could reduce tumors, and they classified it and hid it?
Correct. It was a Soviet study. These Soviet scientists found that both tumors and parasites and these antiparasitics exerted similar mechanisms, and they found that it exerted anti-cancer activity in animals. And that study was classified by the CIA in the 50s or 60s, and not declassified until 2011. So, you know, that did significantly set back some of this vital cancer research.
What would have been their motivation for hiding that information from the American people?
There was lots of motivations to hide possibly effective cancer treatments that were non-patentable and cheap. And that's exactly why it appears they may have classified it. They didn't want some cheap, safe, and effective treatment for cancer. They just wanted the conventional cancer treatment model to go and propagate for 50 years costing millions of cancer patients' lives, as many have suffered from chemotherapy.
That is just, you know, the CIA is obviously incredibly demonic, one of the most evil organizations, criminal organizations in the world. But this just took it to a whole nother level for me. Like, I was already convinced about how demonic and horrible that organization was. And now to hear that they knew about this and kept it from the American people is absolutely horrifying. And of course, playing into the biopharmaceutical, you called it the chemo cartel. And when did we see the rise of, I want to get back to ivermectin here in a moment, but like you want to talk about context here. When did we see like the rise of the chemotherapy cartel?
Yeah, that was around the same time. I believe 50s, 60s, 70s is when we really started to see the rise in these conventional treatments. And then we got to radiation. You know, they've always done surgery. So they've been around for a very long time and have largely remained unthreatened unless there was another novel biological agent that was very profitable and patentable. Those were allowed to come in. Some of these gene therapies, you know, these immune checkpoint inhibitors, you know, all these other things are allowed to get in. And again, they're not very effective. They're not curative. And so, yeah, you know, it began a long time ago, but now the tide is turning.
I think so. And so can you just explain to our audience, like, what happens still currently without even ivermectin or minbenzidol being, you know, involved in some sort of a treatment? But let's say, like, you know, someone you love gets cancer and they go through like a chemo treatment. Can you like walk our audience through? And I'm sure so many of people watching right now have had someone that has cancer in their life that went through chemotherapy. We all know somebody. Can you talk about, number one, how much that costs, who benefits, and what is it actually doing to the patient?
Yes. So chemotherapy costs on average to the patient, after all, you know, the hospital costs, administration costs, drug costs, over $100,000 in a year. The ivermectin and mebendazole, a few grand, or even less, depending on where you source it. And so, you know, you see just how expensive it is. And we have to remember the clinical benefit ratio. So how many people benefit from chemo overall? It ranges depending on the cancer from like as low as like 20%, 10%. It can get up to 50, 60% in some cases, but that's quite low, particularly now when we talk about our study on the ivermectin and mebendazole. It was an 84.4% clinical benefit ratio without destroying the entire body, because that's what chemo does. It kills all the cells. All rapidly dividing cells are destroyed, including healthy cells. And that's why, unfortunately, some of these cancer patients end up kind of withering away. Their last months of their life are absolutely dreadful. They feel worn down as these cytotoxic agents, particularly doxorubicin, it's called the Red Devil, that just destroys the body. And at most, this chemo can extend life, survival time by maybe a month or two, sometimes decreases the survival time. And so, you know, we got to find these alternative methods.
All right, so let's dive into ivermectin here in your study. Is it ivermectin alone or is it matched with mebendazole? And can you walk us through what your study found?
Yes, so this was the single largest human study on ivermectin and mebendazole in cancer patients. Before, we had a few case reports, we had a few case series. In this paper, we had 200 cancer patients with active cancer. 36% had active metastatic cancer. The rest were not currently spreading, but they had tumors. And what happened was, through a telemedicine platform, the wellness company, these cancer patients were prescribed off-label these ivermectin and mebendazole compounded capsules. So it was 25 milligrams of ivermectin in each, 250 milligrams of mebendazole in one capsule. The most common dose that these individuals reported to have taken was one capsule a day. Some took four. They had more side effects, though, primarily gastrointestinal. And so We did a survey, a baseline survey. We collected all the cancer information, all the cancer types. There were so many, over 20 cancer types in this cohort, which was what makes it real world and applicable. The most primary cancers were breast, lung cancer, and then we had thyroid cancers, pancreatic cancers, lymphomas, leukemias, all sorts of cancers. And then after 6 months, we did another survey. And these patients, and about 60% responded. That's a very high response rate, by the way. And of those who responded, 84.4% of them did report to have benefited in their cancer, particularly about half, 48%, did report their cancer disappeared or the tumor shrank. And 32% or 36% reported that their cancer stabilized. So it wasn't spreading, it was staying stable. And so that's what makes up the 84.4% clinical benefit ratio. Now, there was 15% where it did progress. Now, you know, so it doesn't have 100%, you know, effectiveness rate here or benefit rate, but 84.4% is much higher than all of these other pharmaceutical agents, chemo, radiation, etc. It's extremely promising. And now we need double-blind, randomized, placebo-controlled trials. This study has to serve as the springboard. They have to be initiated immediately.
Well, here's something that'll make you look at your rain jacket differently. Most waterproof jackets, the ones from those big outdoor brands, the ones you've been wearing for years, they're coated with something called PFAS. Yeah, they call them forever chemicals because they don't break down, not in the environment, not on your body, not ever. PFAS are what make the water bead up and roll off of your jacket. So that's that satisfying moment where the rain just hits the fabric, just slides right off. Yeah, that's a toxic chemical doing its job. And then doing its other job is poisoning you slowly. That's why I want to tell you about the Bearskin Heavy Storm Rain Jacket. It's rated to 20,000 millimeter waterproof. That's expedition grade. That's the same rating that you'd find on serious mountain gear, but it uses zero PFAS, forever chemicals, none. No chemicals on the membrane, the coating, or the waterproof treatment. That's a 20,000 millimeter waterproof rating without the poison. That's a rain jacket innovation that you can try out for yourself. On top of that, it packs into its own pocket, so you can actually stash it in your bag, your truck, your golf bag. It's always there when the weather turns bad. It zips into the Bearskin hoodie also. So right now in Colorado, we got a snowstorm here in the middle of April. It's unbelievable. Snowing. I can't believe it. And so what did I do? I put this on top of my Bearskin hoodie. So I have full 3-in-1 warmness walking the dog this morning. Kept me dry because it's a super wet, heavy snow today. Middle of April, what the heck? And I stayed warm because the temperature plummeted down to like 20 degrees. So this thing is sealed zippers, taped seams, the works. Right now, Bearskin is running a 60% off the Heavy Storm Rain Jacket sale right now with free shipping. Here's what to do next. Text the word redacted to 36912. That's redacted to 36912. And they'll send you a link so you can grab one at 60% off. Stop wearing a jacket that poisons you while it protects you from the rain. Get a Bearskin Heavy Storm Rain Jacket today. Text the word redacted to 36912. That's 36912 and save 60%. Well, I'm sure you'll get enormous pushback from the industry, the chemo cartel, the biopharmaceutical complex that makes, because at the heart of it, maybe you can explain to our audience, like ivermectin, I mean, it's won what, the Nobel Prize in medicine for going back, and it's decades old, right? So maybe you can explain to our audience why there's very limited profits for ivermectin for these companies, like the biopharmaceutical cartel with all the vaccine, everything else they've got going on. They really won't make any money off of this, right?
No, they won't make any money. You know, some of them may hop on and make some, you know, generic ivermectin pills, but that's not going to be very profitable for them. And particularly ivermectin was discovered, I believe, in the 60s or 70s by a Japanese scientist. He literally isolated some bacteria from a golf course. Can't even make this up. He isolated the compounds in it. He found what was called avermectin. And then from avermectin, they were able to make it a little bit safer in humans to what's called ivermectin now. And so it is a natural, it's derived from a natural source. It's not some completely made up synthetic agent. And that's why we see higher safety profiles with this. And so that's what makes it particularly interesting.
So what does it do to the body? If I'm 49 years old, in fact, you know, our friend of the show, Peter McCullough, Dr. Peter McCullough, they just sent me I'm doing the parasite cleanse, the ivermectin and membenzidol. And I've told my father-in-law about it, you know, with like brain fog and other things. Like I'm starting the process. But anyway, what is it doing to the body? If I just take the ivermectin, what is it doing in my body?
It's doing a lot of things. First and foremost, it definitively eliminates parasites. It literally cuts off their vital cellular energy production. It cuts off what they need to survive, and it kills them. It eliminates them. So it's good. It's great for eliminating parasites. That's why it won the Nobel Prize, in 2015, because it cures river blindness, all sorts of things. And so it's been very effective for that. But when we talk about cancer, what it does is very, very interesting. There's now over 100 preclinical studies that have looked at ivermectin, membendazole, fenbendazole in animals or in the test tube. So the animals, they'll implant them with tumors, or in the test tube, there will be human cancer cells. And they found across these hundreds of studies now, there's over 12 distinct anti-cancer mechanisms with these antiparasitics across more than 12 cancer types. And in particular, the main mechanism of ivermectin is it targets what's called cancer stem cells. And this is literally the source of some of these cancers. Like sometimes you'll get rid of the tumor with, chemo or radiation, but the cancer stem cells are still there. And so they're going to come back. The cancer is going to come back. You eliminate those, they're not going to come back. Ivermectin targets them potently. And then membendazole particularly targets what's called microtubules in the cancer cells. That's crucial for cellular division. And so you cut those off, they won't be able to divide anymore. And so again, very strong mechanisms. And then two more things. Membendazole and ivermectin inhibit what's called glucose metabolism in these cancer cells. So, cancer cells love to feed off of glucose, sugar. You cut off that metabolism, they won't be able to take in the sugar and glucose anymore, and they'll shrink. And so that's what they find in the experiments. And so that's why it's not surprising why we see these results in the first real world human study.
So if you don't have cancer, can you can take this really as a preventative for cancer? Do we have that direct link yet between parasitic infection and cancer? Maybe the CIA did 50 years ago and they hid it from us.
Yeah, we think in at least a subset of cases that parasites could be a root cause of some of these cancers. We don't know how many, what percent, but it could be playing a role for sure. We know that they operate with the similar mechanisms, parasites and tumors, and that is particularly why we think it works. But it also could be because there are literally parasites in these areas of cancer. It's a mix of so many things because there's so many different types of cancer. And so it's hard to really pinpoint, one single cause. But we know, we want to target as many mechanisms as possible. And these antiparasitics do that across 12 mechanisms.
So can you explain the mechanism here with a parasite? You get a parasite, whether it's from eating, raw fish or some food or out hiking or something. I don't know how you're getting these parasites particularly through the environment. Maybe you do specifically. And then how is it causing a replication of cells in the body? I'm thinking of a parasite like a tapeworm that's just kind of living off of the food that I'm feeding it.
Yeah, so the mechanism behind that, well, first you would get the parasite. Sometimes you get it from eating raw food, sometimes sushi. This is a big culprit. If you have a cat, and you go in their litter box often, or, you go swim in some river and it's littered with a bunch of parasites, you swallow some of that water. So there's many different transmission routes to become infected with them. And so that's that. And so how they could cause cancer, well, if they do kind of attach to certain tissues, certain organs in the body, and they begin to kind of feed off of those cells, damage them, and cause all sorts of cellular and biochemical havoc, that may very well trigger some sort of uncontrolled cell growth mechanism in those tissues. Now, I don't know the exact mechanism.
Because they're trying to prevent the parasite, so they're replicating in order to try to stop the parasite?
Yeah, it could be the body's own way of actually defending against the parasite, exactly. Mm. So again, it could be that. It could be because the parasite's causing all sorts of biochemical havoc, gene expression havoc, resulting that way, or it could be a defense mechanism. So it could be many different things.
And then the ivermectin, I've read it to, like, paralyzes them. Is that right? It paralyzes. Is that how, or kills them? Paralyzes them, and the mebendazole, to your point, then basically helps, like, get rid of them completely from the system. Is that the process?
Well, ivermectin and mebendazole, they'll target different types of parasites. Some are more effective against certain types than others. But what they all do is they do literally go into the central nervous systems of these parasites and, yeah, kill them, paralyze them, shut them off. And so, and they're almost, you know, extremely, extremely effective for parasitic infections. But when we talk about cancer, mebendazole appears to be the more potent one.
Hmm. It's unbelievable. So what, and I guess for a preventative, I want to come back to my preventative question. Like, if I'm, you know, by all accounts on the outside, I'm healthy, I think, but who knows what kind of parasites I might have inside of my body. And what, you know, if you're eating sushi, other things, you've been swimming in a lake, who knows? And you start this parasite protocol, an ivermectin, mebendazole parasite cleanse or whatever. How long does that protocol last?
It can take a week. Sometimes they're only a week. Sometimes they're a few days. But most occasionally, yeah, about a week, 2 weeks. If you are confirmed or heavily infected, it could be a month. And then when we get to cancer, it can be longer than that, 6 months or a year. And so, yeah, it kind of ranges. But, you know, for somebody that just is suspecting they have, you know, parasitic infections, a week would be sufficient. But again, I'm not a physician. I can't give medical advice, but that is what many people commonly report to take, and as well as the instructions indicate that.
What does it do to the body? Like, do I start to feel like better almost immediately? Is this something that I feel maybe better after a week or so? Maybe it's brain fog. You know, maybe you don't even know you have parasites, but you're doing it as a preventative measure. What have you seen in your report, your studies and reporting from different patients?
Well, if you're infected with a bunch of parasites, yeah, you can have lots of fatigue, lots of brain fog, weakness, and sleep disturbances. You can just feel off. And if you did truly have those parasitic infections, you take the antiparasitics, you should. If you were infected, feel remarkably better if that was the cause of those symptoms. And yeah, you would have less brain fog, less fatigue, etc. And so, you know, it would be very beneficial, and it always is, to clear out those parasites. And so, yeah, it does do that. Now, if you take too much, and some people do get some side effects with the antiparasitics, very mild. It's safer than Tylenol, but what can happen is you can get some gastrointestinal upset. You can get a stomach ache. In our study, about 25% reported mild side effects, including the stomach aches. And then you can get dizzy, particularly if you take like 4 capsules in a day, that can result in some dizziness. So, you know, it's not completely free of side effects, but, you know, they're very, very mild.
Yeah, I imagine if you're taking it on like an empty stomach or something, like maybe you want to eat some food with it or whatever. This is fascinating. And you know, obviously the cancer study is at the heart of this, but I'm just fascinated from this idea that we've known about this parasitic connection to tumors, going back to the CIA classifying this information. How often, I know you're not a doctor, you can't get medical advice, but is this something you would want to do like once a year to your body, go through this cleanse, like maybe once a year, maybe twice a year, just to make sure especially if you love sushi, like my daughters freaking love sushi. My wife loves sushi. And in fact, lately she's even been like, man, I just feel like I can't put sentences together. She's like, I'm super sleepy. And I've been seeing these sushi studies and ivermectin. And I said, all right, we're getting you a parasite cleanse because I don't know what's going on, but you're like falling asleep at like 8 o'clock at night. You know, like what's going on here? So anyway, how often should you be doing this?
Yeah, well, for a healthy individual that does, you know, eat sushi or, you know, goes in rivers, you know, in the middle of nowhere often, or goes in lakes, just lakes, and swallows a bunch of water. Or, you know, you're in, you know, outside often in the forest, or, you know, whatever, you're doing stuff that's exposing you to the wilderness or the outdoors. Yeah, once a year, could be something. That's something that I would do, particularly if I eat sushi. I eat a lot of sushi as well. And, yeah, I would say just as a preventative measure, I would personally, try it out once a year, given that I'm exposed to some of these transmission vectors of parasites. Now, if I wasn't exposed to any, you know, I would be less, you know, adamant, but, yeah. Me personally, I think once a year would be sufficient, but if you're highly exposed to some possible parasitic environments, I would say, you know, it could be more frequent every 6 months.
So back to the study, and before we let you go, now the next step, as you mentioned, pushing this towards like massive, I guess, like clinical trials, right? Control groups, placebo, all of that. Who would spearhead that? If like big pharma doesn't stand to benefit from that, how would we get one of these big studies?
Good question. We need the government to finally do something. We need the NIH. We need, you know, the National Cancer Institute. They got to start running these trials with the taxpayer money. I think taxpayers would be happy to fund a study like this personally instead of many of the other things currently ongoing. And so, yeah, we need a study that is non-biased, that is not going to, you know, result in, you know, falsification of the data as we might see if some large pharmaceutical companies did such a study to kind of defame it or debunk it. So we need, yeah, an independent, large-scale, randomized, double-blind, placebo-controlled trial. The government can do it, and they've got to do it because this is one of the most promising clinical benefit ratios that we have seen, particularly for a safe compound like this. And so once that occurs, then this can start to be incorporated into some major guidelines, et cetera. But, you know, we're going to have to get past the chemo cartel.
Hopefully people can tweet this out, tweet it at Bobby Kennedy, pushing to see if we can get this study. Because how much does a study like this cost?
Clinical trial could cost hundreds of thousands, maybe millions. It depends on how many patients you have. So it can be very expensive.
That's okay. We spend $1 billion right now in Israel's war against Iran per day, $1 billion per day. So I think we could maybe use some of that money, right?
Or yeah,
take some of the war money and try to cure cancer in the United States. Yeah, just an idea. Hope the administration is paying attention. Nicholas, where can people learn more about this study if they want to dive more deeply into this ivermectin data? Especially if they have a family member that's, you know, maybe just was diagnosed with cancer. And by the way, can I just ask you before you go, like the cancer strata, was it like stage one, stage four? Like how far gone was somebody with cancer when they responded and found that it made their tumors disappear?
Yeah, so it was so again, about 37% had active metastatic cancer. So that'll be stage four, stage three. And then, you know, about 60% were stage one, stage two. So it was a wide variety. And so it appeared to have resulted in the no evidence of disease and even advanced cancer patients. But again, we got to do more study. Our next study is going to be larger sample sizes and specifically looking at each cancer type and staging status. So we'll be able to see exactly what is occurring there. But yeah, so far it's been a wide range and it's very promising. But one last thing that's very important is, you know, a lot of people, you know, they still want to take chemo, they still want radiation. And our study showed, you know, about 20% were taking chemo, 20% radiation, 20% surgery. It was very safe. The ivermectin and benzoyl was very safe in those undergoing conventional treatments. And so that's what's important. So people, you know, they can still do the conventional way, but this is actually can be an adjunct to that therapy. So that's what's very promising as well.
Yeah. So if people still want to take chemo, I don't know who would want to do that, but have all your hair fall out and your body is being poisoned. Okay. But yeah, you could still do that and you can still do the radiation and then also consult your doctor about ivermectin and benzidol as part of that whole process. And it just really saddens me because I've had friends who've lost loved ones to cancer, you know, over the past few years. And if only they had had access to this information, you know, would they still be with us? And that's just, you know, we can't really ever wind the clock back, of course, but it's just sad to think that you had a government that knew this information was keeping it from us and family members who passed away because they didn't have access to this free and open information and cheap and really effective medicines.
Yeah, millions of cancer victims have paid the price as a result of suppression or ignorance or just disastrous decisions to censor this stuff or not do the studies. And so finally, we're doing them. Hopefully, we can start to reverse this. Cancer is the second leading cause of death in the world. We got to stop it. And this appears to be one way we may be able to help stop it. And so it's very promising. But you could check the study out. There's multiple places you can go. You can go to twc.health/cancer, and you'll see a breakdown of the study and everything. You can go to the Zenodo preprint server where the study is hosted. And you can find the link to that on my personal X account at NIC Hulsher, HULSCHER. You can also follow me on thefocalpoints.com. That's our Substack publication with Dr. Peter McCullough and John Leake, as well as myself. So you'll find all the links there. And well, one last thing, my personal website, NicholasHulsher.com. You can find it there as well.
Awesome. Thank you, Nick. I really appreciate you joining us. Really appreciate you sharing this new study with us. And hopefully this will help somebody in our audience or hopefully help thousands of people in our audience. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much, Nicholas.
Thanks for having me.